Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to welcome you this afternoon to the Unity panel, probably your last panel of the weekend. Special needs seating over on the left side for people who need it. I'd like to start the meeting with a moment of silence and gratitude for AA recoveries of the past 70 years. My name is George. I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Michigan, everybody. We have three speakers today and on the subject of unity, and without further ado, I will introduce the first one, who is Paul W. from Montana.
Hi, everybody. I'm Paul Watson. I'm an alcoholic. Can you all hear me? They really crucified a speaker at the last meeting that they couldn't hear, so I thought, I'm really going to let you have it. I've got to get a few things out of the way first. This is the first one. That's our home group wave. And you can use that if you want. Oh, my sobriety birthday is February 22nd of 1992. So, and I'm almost 6 months older than my wife. I do like that. You know, when I first saw her walk into an AA meeting, I thought, I want everything that gal has, and I don't know how to get it. And so I had to learn how to grow up in sobriety And, you know, we're talking about unity, the most cherished quality. And I was asked by our delegate, I can't remember what it was, 3-4 months ago, if I would entertain the thought of speaking at the International Convention. And I said, no, I'll do it. I didn't want to think about it at all. I just said yes. I would prefer not to think about doing something like this. This is my third convention, and to date, it's just a fantastic time and event, and I just love meeting the people. The thing that I like most about being able to be unified is that standing in line, waiting for something to eat, and you visit with the person in the back of you, and you visit with the person in front of you on either side. You find out where they're from, and it's just that's great. And I remember when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I live in the northwest part of Montana by Glacier National Park. Just beautiful, gorgeous place. Lots of hiking and fishing and hunting. And I was the kind of alcoholic that if I saw you out in the woods, I got pissed. I thought, this is mine. You get out of here. You leave. I don't like you. I don't even know you, but I don't like you, you know. And so for me to be able to stand up here and talk about unity is just 180 degrees from the way I used to live my life. I did do some studying on this, and so I'm really going to try to stick to unity. June 30th in the Daily Reflections, the topic was sacrifice equals unity equals survival, and it's a little blurb out of, as Bill sees it on page 220. It says, the unity, the effectiveness, and even the survival of AA will always depend upon our continued willingness to give up some of our personal ambitions and desires for the common safety and welfare. Just as sacrifice means survival for the individual alcoholic, so does sacrifice mean unity and survival for the group and for AA's entire fellowship. And I wouldn't have given you 2 cents for any of this stuff when I first got here. The fellow that I followed up to my first meeting said all you need to say is your name and that you have a desire to stay sober. And only half of that was true. I knew my name. I'd have loved to have been able to drink and drink successfully, but I had lost the ability to do that. I had lost the power of choice over whether or not I would take a drink. I remember going to a meeting in the state prison down in Deer Lodge, and Tiny was sitting right across from me. Well, don't you know, Tiny is about 350 pounds. And he says, you mean to tell me that if they didn't set your favorite booze right out here in front of you, that you wouldn't take a drink of it? And I thought, my first thought was, I've got to say something that doesn't piss Tiny off. I just don't want to get him angry at me. And then I thought about what Dr. Bob said at the last part of his story. As long as I keep doing what I'm doing and thinking how I'm thinking, I won't have to take that drink. And so that's what I was able to share, and I was able to stay unified with this message that is found in the first 164 pages of our big book. And that has gotten me through everything in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, our three legacies, recovery, unity, and service. And to be able to talk about unity has just been a real treat to learn about it. And I've never had somebody on the side of me making motions. Hi. You all know what this is? It's our service manual. It's a very good description of our third legacy of service. And in the beginning of it, it has a Declaration of Unity statement. It says, "This we owe to AA's future, to place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united, for on AA unity depend our lives and the lives of those to come." Now, when I first got here, I didn't care too much about living. Matter of fact, I hated waking up in the morning. You know, I just soon, oh, shoot, now what? I got to go through this whole terrible cycle again. And I thought, I don't want to do that. The prospect of that just didn't entice me or excite me at all. Even early in sobriety, I would go home and I thought, oh, nuts, now what? You know, at least when I was at work, I had something to do. I was occupied. But I'd go home and I'd go to bed about 5:30. You know, and the worst thing about that was I was the only one in it. You know, and I'd cover up and I'd start sweating and I thought, aren't we having fun now? You know, and it was nuts. It was absolutely nuts. I did write out a few notes. I even went to the dictionary, you know, to look up my sponsor recommended that I do this, you know, so it's all his fault. You know what? And I am so proud to say that my sponsor is in the crowd with us, Jim, sitting down there. My wife is here, Nancy, and most of the people that flew out with us, you know, and I come to call them my friends. And when I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous, I can guarantee you I had no friends in the whole wide world. I hated my family. I hated the people I worked with. I hated my dog. I had literally killed my cat. I was a mess. I was a mess, you know. And so there was no way in the world that I could carry a message. I just didn't have the ability to do that. And it was through learning. When I looked up the word unity, my first thought was, it has to start with me. I can't depend upon you for my sobriety. I can learn from you what you do to stay away from that first drink, but I can't learn from you what do you do when you go out of a meeting. You know, I see a bunch at meetings. I've seen 40 to 50,000 here at the International Roundup, but that's just for a short amount of time. I'm with myself for the majority of my life, you know, and for me to be comfortable or to learn how to be comfortable, I have to really, really, really pay attention when I'm at meetings, or I have to pay attention when I'm around you. And then see what you do. It doesn't matter if I like it or not. That's the first thing I got when I got sober. I got my opinion back. I really got my opinion back. And that's a killer. That is absolutely a killer, you know. And so when I looked up the word unity, I thought, well, what is unity? And for me, one of the first things that come to mind when I went to my first meeting was all the smiles. It was just, everybody had a smile on their face, and it just so angered me. It made me so mad, because I thought, I don't feel good on the inside, and I'm sure as heck not going to smile, and you can't drag one out of me either. And I'd walk around like this, you know, and that's not very unified. And I remember at my first meeting, Russ, the old guy, said, you get down on your knees tonight and you pray. And after I had killed him, I began to think about what he said. You know, and I got home that night, and amidst all the sweating, and they give me a big book. And, oh, gosh, I just hate it when somebody gave me something, because I thought, okay, now what do I have to give back to you? I've got to return that favor, return that gift. And so, but what it boiled down to was that I was afraid not to do what I was asked to do or told to do or suggested to do. And so I began to do all these things. And so another word that comes to mind when I think about unity is sacrifice. I sacrifice what it is that I think I should be doing for what it is that I've been suggested to do. And when I try to live a life based on what you suggest for me to do, it turns out way different than anything I'd ever intended. And I wouldn't have, had I not done what you suggested for me to do, I wouldn't be here today. I just wouldn't. It wouldn't have worked out for me. Open-mindedness, willingness. I get a lot of peace when I try to do things that you suggest for me to do. And the word cherished means to nurture, protect, strengthen, give value to. I like this one, keep pure, undiluted. You know, I love my home group. That, you take that back with you and you use it. And we have a meeting on Monday night at 7 p.m., Tuesday noon and Tuesday at 6:30, Wednesday night at 7 p.m., Thursday noon, and a speaker meeting Friday night. And it's all based on the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Matter of fact, I have a home group meeting card that I'll give you our primary purpose. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and carry AA's message of recovery from alcoholism in a structured manner through the use of our basic text, Alcoholics Anonymous, and other conference-approved literature, sponsorship, and an active home group. And I found that when I do that, you know, I don't have to make believe what unity is. I mean, it's just my life. It's what I do. It's how I live. You know, and what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, I transfer directly to my home life. I remember back in 1990, I met the girl of my dreams, and for 6 months I tried to get her drink like I drank, and it didn't work. Oh, after that I didn't like her, you know. It just didn't work, you know. So I could not get her to do what I wanted her to do, and so therefore I would just get rid of her, and I became a homicidal maniac, absolute nuts, just absolute nuts, and got into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I carried all that baggage in with me. Gosh, I wrote down a whole bunch of stuff. I love the word quality. It means an acquired characteristic that determines the nature and behavior of Alcoholics Anonymous and its members. And so it makes me ask myself, what am I doing and why am I doing it? You know, what are my motives? And I remember I would go to my sponsor. He'd take one look at me and get the big book out and turn page 100, 101. And he says, here, read this before you say anything. And I would read that and I thought, oh, nuts, he got me again. You know, it's my motives. My motives suck. And as my motives suck, so does my life. You know, and as I am, so I do. And if it's something to pass on, it's like attitude. Is my attitude worth passing on? Or do I just stay with it and suffer with it? Most of what I wrote down about unity was, how do I treat the newcomer? And that's the lifeblood of our fellowship. The beginning of Chapter 7 indicates to me that the best way for me to stay sober is to ensure that the newcomer has a place to come to get sober, and that in our preamble it talks about us helping them to achieve sobriety. And a home group member looked that word up in the dictionary again, and it says it means until they get it. You know, so that's from now until I don't ever see them again. And so my job is to make sure, you know, to go up and greet them, number one. And if I have a home group that I go to on a regular basis, I either know who the visitors are or I know who the newcomers are. And I love going up to people that come in with about 20, 30 years and ask, is this your first meeting? Oh, they love that. They just love that. But what the heck, I don't know. And I've learned that it's okay to ask questions based on what my motives are. And my motives today are to make sure that my home group has adequate information about Alcoholics Anonymous, enough information that we can give it away to the newcomer. And another thing about newcomer is that do I give them a big book and say, bye, I'll see you later? Or do I sit with them and help them go through the book like my sponsor did, word for word for word for word? And once again, it doesn't matter if I like it. I love the results. I don't like how I started out. But more importantly, I don't like what it used to be like when I was out drinking either. I was a chairperson for our State Spring Roundup and just finished that in May of this year. Met a person from La Mesa, California, Ken D. Maybe some of you have heard of him in listening to tapes, or maybe even heard, you know, him speak. And the guy is amazing. He is just absolutely amazing. And he was saying one of the things that God asked us to do is come to a place we've never been. And in order for me to get there, I've got to do things I've never done. And for me, that's what my sobriety has been about, is to get to a place I've never been, and I learn to do things that I've never done by watching you, listening to you, copying what you do, and then passing that on to the newcomer. And as I do that, so my life benefits from the activities, the actions that I take, and also I can keep tabs on the newcomer. I've got a fellow that, he doesn't know it, but I'm going to attack him when I get back. He's a fellow from treatment, and he says, you know what, I probably won't I won't have enough nerve to ask for somebody to help me, you know, go through the book. And he says, you won't have to, because I'll come and ask you. You know, so unity in Alcoholics Anonymous depends directly on the actions that I'm willing to take. And if those actions are based on what's found in the first 164 pages, I will have a wonderful life. And I just pray and hope that the newcomer that follows will also have a wonderful life. And I'm responsible for the actions that I do take. One of the things I love to do at an international convention is go up to the police and ask them, how are we doing? Are we doing all right? How are we making your job easier? Are we making you nervous? You know, sometimes I have to be very, very careful of that, you know, because I'm the kind of person that can step on a person's toes and think nothing of it. You know, I used to do that as a regular routine, and today I try not to do that. How do I treat my wife when I get up in the morning? Do I say that I love her? Do I make sure that she has a good time? Because when I do that, then I'm insured to have a good time, you know. And it's just a treat to be able to be with people and not be afraid. I tell you, I hated being afraid. It was eating my guts up. And the only thing that would put the fire out would be the booze, but didn't put it out altogether. You know, and Alcoholics Anonymous has put that fire out altogether. You know, it comes back when I stop doing what it is that I've learned how to do, you know, by watching and doing and listening and paying attention. You know, and if I stop doing that, then it's right back there. And I love the unity that allows me to sit with a person from Cleveland, a person from New Orleans, and I'm not sure where George is from, but none of them have shunned me yet. You know, as long as I keep doing this stuff, you know. So unity is indeed the most cherished quality. You know, and as I look at it, it's my lifeline to not only being able to stay in touch with those that do not yet know that they don't have to live like they are living. And it also ensures that fire on the inside is not so bad anymore, you know, and I can go about and look people in the eye. I love the promises after the fifth step, and I love that it can be tied to our primary purpose, because if I don't stick to the primary purpose, then none of those promises in the fifth step are going to ever come true again, because I'm not going to be living the life like I've been taught to live. Now, I guess that I could probably continue to talk forever, but George is getting kind of nervous, so I think maybe I'll relish this moment forever, and I'm sure thanking all of you that came and made a choice to come. And I pray that you continue to have a wonderful life. And when you take care of Alcoholics Anonymous, we'll take care of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. I'm from Milford, Michigan. I got some friends out there, and We have a small town, about 6,300 people, and we have a meeting every night of the week, two on Thursday, actually, and you're welcome to, if you're passing through. We're about 20 miles north of Ann Arbor. Our next speaker will be Gene L. from Ohio.
Thank you so much. It is a tremendous pleasure to be here. I am just thrilled to be here. And you know, I had a sponsor who started every meeting with the following saying. She said, "Isn't it wonderful to be sober?" And she came from Kentucky, and she had the enthusiasm of a Kentuckian, and that lady meant every word of it, absolutely every word of it. Because she was so grateful to be sober. And she gave me that gratitude. And for that, I am eternally grateful. I want to thank the committee for honoring me and asking me to speak, because it is such a privilege to be able to address each and every one of you, because I love each and every one of you. And if no one has told you today they love you, I love you. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart, because you people have given me life, life itself. I had no idea how to live, and I don't think I'd have ever figured it out, whether I ever picked up a drink or not. But you gave me a program of complete honesty and sobriety and peace. Serenity is something I treasure today. On June 25th, I celebrated 30 years of sobriety. I'm so grateful for that, so eternally grateful. I've had the privilege to sponsor a number of gals, and I was in Richmond, Virginia for 7.5 years, and I sponsored some gals there, and one of my very favorite, Suzanne, is here today, and we have spent 3 days together having a marvelous time at this convention. My very, very first sponsee, Alberta, is a gal who has inoperable cancer, and she is smiling every time I see her. She has chemo. I have had it every week since January, and she goes to work. She works at a halfway house, and she has the same gratitude that my sponsor gave to me that she has today. And I can't tell you how grateful that makes me feel. Because if we aren't grateful for what we have, we can lose it. And most important, if we don't give it away, we won't keep it. You know, the topic today is unity. And it is absolutely the most treasured part of this program. It says in our first tradition that our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. And indeed it does. It absolutely does. Unity is the foundation upon which our recovery lies. The remainder of our traditions explain how our group should be formed, autonomously except in matters affecting groups or AA as a whole. And isn't it the truth? You know, without one another, we don't survive. We don't maintain this gift of sobriety. We absolutely do not know how to keep it. If you don't have a group in your area, and we are so far throughout the world today, that we can find another alcoholic, just one other alcoholic, start a meeting, and the next thing you know, we are a group. And many times, my husband and I have been given the great privilege of being able to speak on cruise ships. We lecture. And we've traveled throughout the world, and on every cruise ship, they have a Bill, Friends of Bill W. meeting. And we always go to those, and when we are there, sometimes no one else joins us, even though there's 1,000 people on the ship. But he and I are there. And we've had meetings, just the two of us, because it only takes two people for a meeting. It is so important. I think that if you think about the concept of unity and the importance of two people and a group, that group is what saved my life. And I came into this program a wretched mess, totally wretched mess. And I had no spirituality. Physically, I was a wreck. Emotionally, I was shot. And spiritually, there was just nothing there. Mentally, you know, I thought I knew it all. That's the ironic part. You know, we have these egos and absolutely zero self-esteem. And I remember at my very first meeting, I was intervened by a friend I barely knew, and he brought three women into my home to meet me, and they immediately whisked me off to meetings, and I was so happy to be there. Now, I didn't initially think I was an alcoholic, because I was sure that all the people I blamed were behind my problems. But I really, really stayed because I loved you all. You know, I loved the smiles on your faces. And unlike many of you, I really knew you had something special. And I was going to get it, and then I was going to leave, you see. But fortunately, I stayed. You know, they talk about 90 meetings in 90 days. Well, I went to probably 100. I was alone. My kids were away at school. They were all gone. And I was grieving the loss of someone in my life. And so I needed to be there. I had nowhere else to go. And I didn't want to drink again. I knew that, but I was terrified that I was the exception to the rule. I didn't think I could stop. I don't know about you, but I know that I didn't believe that I could stop drinking. And so I basically held on with my fingernails for the first week or two, and eventually it was easier and easier. And about 6 months of my sobriety, I finally realized that I had been able to stay stopped and really had no desire for alcohol again. And I realized that something had done that for me. Now, I tried to get a sponsor, and six people that I asked said they were too busy to sponsor me. And so I tried to sponsor myself. Well, don't ever do that, I'll tell you. It's a drastic mistake. At any rate, after that period of time, that first year and a half in my program, I had many, many problems in my life. My children came home. They needed money. They needed help. They needed a lot of things. And I had one son who needed my help big time. He was in the program, and I wanted the program to fix him. But God love him, he was schizophrenic. And I had to let go of that, and I didn't want to. I wanted to fix him. God knows I wanted to fix him. And in that struggle, I became so overwhelmed with the problems that I had that I didn't know what to do. And I prayed to God, didn't get any answer, and I attempted suicide. And at the end of that suicide attempt, I had a choice of going to a psych ward or to treatment. And I said, I want to go to treatment. And I went, and I am so eternally grateful that I went there because I met my sponsor there. And her name was Minnie Charles, and I use her name because there's a group named after her in Cleveland. And she was such a remarkable woman. She volunteered 40 to 50 hours a week at a women's treatment center, and every time I turned around, she was there. So I said to Minnie, please sponsor me, and she said, sure, I'll sponsor you, but I want you to take the cotton out of your ears, put it in your mouth. I want you to forget everything you think you know, and we're going to start again. And so start again we did. She taught me how to work those steps, one at a time. See, I wanted to learn them all quickly because I wanted what you people had, but I didn't know how to do that. So we got to step three, and I had a little problem with three because, you know, turning my life and my will over to another source was sort of mind-boggling to me, and I wanted to be sure that this source was going to take good care of it. She said, you know, you're turning it over to the care of God as you understand him. And I had a God then. I had found a God that I had lost for so many years, and I can't tell you how grateful I am for that. God today is as close as my heartbeat, and I mean that. I talked to him all day in all kinds of situations, and he helps me. And today, you see, in all these years, I've been able to help my son. He's in a nursing home today and very ill physically as well as mentally. He's had brain damage as well, and my husband, God love him, takes me to see him. He's 2 hours away, and we go every 2 weeks and see my son. And it has been such a gift in my life. This program and working these steps has been the greatest gift I've ever had because I have learned how to live, how to love, how to be honest, how to be unselfish, how to examine my motives, and how to love. I remember my sponsor telling me, you don't know how to love. I was highly insulted at that because I thought I loved a lot of people. And she said, you know, until you understand complete honesty, complete unselfishness, complete purity of motive, you don't know how to love. And so I had to learn those things first. Learning complete honesty took time. I was not an easy learner. I was slow, and I took my time, and I learned. I began to sponsor when I was 2 years sober, and Bertie was my first one. God love her. She was my tool, and the 12 steps were the solution to her problems and to mine. And believe me, when you sponsor, you learn how to work this program. I remember being warned about not being a two-stepper, come into this program and then suddenly go help people. You know, they warned me about that and said, you've got to work the 12 steps before you go out to help someone else. And I've been doing that ever since. I think that we each have gifts. Some of us are work for GSR. Others go to central office, answer the telephone. Many of us are chair people, leads, whatever. But I think my biggest gift has been sponsorship. I love sponsoring others and watching the growth because it is so amazing to see us mature and grow and emotionally grow up, spiritually grow up, physically and mentally relax and find serenity. I don't have all the answers today. I only have one answer, and that answer is this fellowship. It is the unity in this fellowship that brought me here. If Bill had not needed Bob in order to stay sober, we would not be in all those countries that we saw the flags of last night. It was the most thrilling sight. I always get tears in my eyes when I see that. And I think about how God has planned that we reach out to all these countries in the world. It is a total miracle. We are all miracles. We could be dead because this is a terminal disease. And don't ever forget that when you think of going out, because it can kill you. I've seen many, many people go out and wind up that way. And believe me, it is so great to get through all of the difficulties, all the pain, all the loss that we go through in sobriety, but we can cope with it because we have serenity. We have others to help us. If you ever go to an AA funeral, you'll see thousands of people show up. It's so amazing how we stick together. Two friends of mine from one of the cruise ships are here today. Isn't that a miracle? I was so thrilled to see them. Really, really thrilled. This is an international fellowship of men and women who are united under gods of our own understanding, in our own way, and in our own sense. I think that the 12 and 12 reminds us that the unity of AA is the most cherished quality that our society has. Our lives, the lives of all to come, depend squarely on it. Without unity, the heart of AA would cease to beat. Our world arteries would no longer carry the life-giving grace of God. This is certainly from Bill. And I want to share with you a little note that the daughter that was probably the most affected by my alcoholism wrote me on my 5th anniversary in this fellowship. She says to my mother, helper and guide, my support and source of greatest comfort, the Father bless your life and strengthen your path. With all of my love for all we have known and been to each other, bless you, Jerry. And it's one of my most treasured possessions. I have letters like that from all of my children. And I'm so grateful to share this gift of sobriety that you've given me back with you, and to urge you to keep coming back. Please keep coming back. Support these conventions and support this fellowship. God love you all.
Thank you, Jean. I guess we're mentioning sobriety dates. I did have a landmark last spring, and that was I passed a point where I've spent more than half of my life in the program, and I'm 62 years old now, so you can figure it out for yourself. Our next speaker is Irving D. from Louisiana.
Hello, I'm Irvin, and I'm an alcoholic. It's good to see y'all here. You know, he was talking about my home group is designed for living both in Baton Rouge and Lafayette, and my sobriety date is May 23rd, 1990. And that's a lot more you're doing than mine, and I can promise you that much. You know, you mentioned sponsorship. My sponsor is here. My sponsor's sponsor is here, and I have a sponsee here. So we have four generations from Louisiana sitting in Toronto, Canada. You know, I would hope that symbolizes a little bit of unity. You know, to me, that is the symbol. You know, if I go into a group and, you know, there's different types of groups, and that's part of the unity, too. We're allowed to screw up if we need to. You know, just like I am as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've screwed up every possible way there is. It's the only way I've ever learned how to live is by screwing up. But if I go into a group and they have 30 years of sobriety, 40 years of sobriety, 10 years of sobriety, and one day of sobriety, along with 1 year, I have the feeling I'm in a healthy group. You know, I can normally see that. We left New Orleans at 4 o'clock. We woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday and flew down to Buffalo, drove up to Niagara Falls, spent 2 days, and made it into Toronto on Thursday. And that may not sound like it has anything to do with unity, but the deal is we spent all that time running wide open, looking at God's creation and having a good time. We didn't make a meeting during that time. By the time I got to Toronto, I was bugging out, you know. I mean, I was half nuts, you know. And then all of a sudden I leave the hotel and I bring a friend of mine that had just been operated on for cancer. And he had registered online. And I know a lot of people. And one of the people I knew stopped me and talked to me. And I lost my friend and I see all these people, you know. And I knew he was in one of those lines. And I was sitting down at one of the tables, and I was afraid he'd get past me. I was just looking at one side and looking at the other, and I'd look again. And, you know, and finally one of these guys from Toronto comes up. He probably said, look, we got a newcomer about to get drunk here, you know. He came up to me and said, sir, do you need any help? And I said, I sure do. I said, I got a friend of mine with cancer that's lost in the middle, that got operated on with cancer. I know can't stand up long, and he's stuck in one of those doggone lines. And the guy went with me. We found him, and he brought him to the front, got him registered. And, you know, that's the unity we're talking about. You know, I can leave Louisiana and come to Toronto, Canada, where they know what a crazy drunk looks like, too. You know? And that's the truth. That is the truth. There's no place on earth I can go where I will not be understood. You know, back in 1935, there wasn't but two people understood each other, and thank God they did. You know, before that, we had nowhere to go. Nowhere whatsoever. You know, we'd either end up dead, in a prison, or in the spot that I got to with nowhere to go where I had... My last 2 years of drinking, I shook so violently I couldn't even use utensils. My last drunk started on a Wednesday, and I came to on a Monday. And I finally made it into you people. You know, I finally made it into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was unemployable. Hell, basically, I wasn't human. You know, and I have the feeling you people understand what I'm talking about, or I doubt you would have paid the money to come in here and listen to us. You know, I have the feeling, you know, and I made it in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd like to say I became a Class A pupil. You know, I just went straight into the book, listened to it. You know, I was one angry, ungrateful. There aren't even words to describe what the hell I was. You know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was teetotally upset with anybody that had anything to do with my life. You know, look at what the hell they did to me. Put me in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. The first 5 months I was sober, I fired 5 sponsors. I figured they had a month to make me well, and they just, you know, you're just not moving along well enough, you know, and I could go through time, and, you know, I couldn't understand how in the hell a bunch of people sitting in a room talking was going to stop me from drinking. The miracle was I had nowhere else to go. You know, they talk about the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. It's all I had. You know what? It was enough. You know, it's a good thing. I was in small groups, and I mean, I went in there, and I'd go 5 minutes after the meeting started, and I'd leave when the meeting would end. And for about those 5 months, I just stared at those people in that meeting. I wouldn't even say a word. And you know what? They never turned me around. One day, one guy got upset. You know, I can imagine after a period of time, you would. And he asked me, he said, "Why in the hell are you here?" You know, and I told him, "I'm here because I have a desire to stop drinking. Why in the hell are you here?" You know, I thought that the traditions were my Bill of Rights. And in a way, they were. You know, I could sum it up real quick. By the time I was 6 months sober, making a meeting every day, I was twice as crazy as the day I walked in. And that is the absolute truth. You know, the big book says, "Half measures availed us nothing." We stood at the turning point. I have the feeling some of those first 100 screwed around too. You know, we asked that protection and care were complete abandon. At 6 months sober, I was at the point where I was either going to drink, go completely nuts, or blow my head off. And the best damn thing ever happened to me. You know, I beat on the bed that night and said, "God, if you're really here, you can have it because there's nothing left." You know, and I'd like to give you some big old deal about what really went on. You know, what I know today is the truth is it's the first time in my life I ever admitted there might be something greater than me. You know, after all that fight, you know, it was only me fighting the rest of everything, and I didn't even know it. So where does the unity come in that? You know, those people willing to tolerate and put up with me until I was able to get to that point. You know, the reason why that guy in Toronto is so important is, you know, I've been around a decent amount of time now, you know, and most people think I'm somewhat well. But you know what? Sometimes I'm the alcoholic who still suffers today, you know, no matter how long I've been here. I can get on a roll, people. You know, during those first couple of months when I stayed sober, I really couldn't read the big book. There's very little I could do, but what those people in those groups did is made sure I stayed busy. It's the one thing they could do. They had drunks for me to run the meetings. They'd run me to auctions. They'd run me to conventions. They kept me busy because if they knew I stopped, that I would certainly die, and I promise you I would have. What ended up happening out of those people's love is that when I finally became somewhat stable and able to do some service, I couldn't tell Alcoholics Anonymous no. And I do believe certainly that ended up being the founding point that saved my rear. They came in and I finally became GSR and, you know, I went to assembly and I went to all these district meetings and, you know, I was still paranoid as hell. You know, as GSR, I didn't trust the DCM, and I certainly didn't trust those officers in assembly, you know. There is a plot going on here, and I will find it, you know. And I set out to do that. Believe me, if y'all ever see aggravating people at assembly, I was A number one. You know, why are y'all spending all this money on hotels? Y'all could be helping drunks, you know. And I was adding up everything they spent money on and going to attack all these people and, you know what? They didn't tell me to leave. You know, and I stayed GSR. I became DCM. Then for sure I knew the officers had something going on. You know, and I set out to correct those people. And all of a sudden, and I'll tell you what. When I was through my DCM term, I became a corrections chair for the state of Louisiana. I could go into the prisons for a long time, but I don't have time. And after that, you know, I was ready to rotate out and go home. I didn't want to be one of them officer people, you know. That's the truth. You know, I'll let those people be the officers, you know. They had a guy that came up to me and said, "Irvin, you know, if you don't run, you can't complain anymore." Man, I started thinking about that. I said, man. And I decided to run, and The first thing I ran for was alternate delegate, which I was pretty sure I wouldn't get, and I won. You know, I didn't even go to the hat, won 2/3 of the vote, you know, and I discovered there was no plot going on with the offices, you know. I mean, you know, they'd show up, do their little meeting, and head out. You know, it's like, well, where's the good stuff at, you know? And after that, after 2 years was over, I ran for delegate, and I won. Actually, I won on the first ballot, which is pretty much unheard of in my state. And now I can really, I'm going to GSO and find the plot there, man. You know, now I'm going to get to find the big plot, you know. And the truth is, I was terrified as hell going into there. You know, I'd reached, we never stop reaching plateaus where we don't become frightened, you know. And you talk about a terrifying experience for a new delegate to walk in the conference. And I went there and worried about doing the best I could to represent my state. And after about 3 days of being there, I realized that those people weren't nothing but drunks. That's the truth. There was nothing but drunks there. They were just like me. And I became extremely comfortable because for the first time ever, I knew beyond any shadow of doubt that God was running Alcoholics Anonymous. There was no doubt in my mind. A group of people like us are incapable of keeping this thing together. Absolutely incapable of keeping Alcoholics Anonymous together. Can you imagine after all these years with people like us, we have not been able to change the big book? Do y'all believe in miracles? I'm speaking the truth, too. The things that are around us that we just don't see. You know, and then she mentioned all the flags and the, you know, I got to talking to my sponsor about it. You know, countries that certainly hate each other are standing side by side with a flag in Alcoholics Anonymous. How does that happen? There's only a few ways that can happen. One is we only do one thing well here. We help a drunk. We're incapable of doing anything else. And I think God made that possible. I really believe that. As a group of people, believe me, I've been in every part of this thing. You know, you people have been involved in crazy home group meetings, I'm sure. But how does that happen? You know, I can tell you after being active for a while, if you look at it, the crazier it gets, it's the further away from we're discussing helping a drunk. The crazier anything gets at assembly, at GSO, there isn't but one thing we can ever agree on. It's the only thing we do well. That's where our unity comes from, is that understanding. Every other society that ever tried to help drunks failed because they went into other things. But for some crazy reasons, we've been able to turn around our, hell, egomania and been able to stand here and survive. You know, and a lot of times people say, you know, we need to keep AA here for my children. And yes, I believe that. But I need to keep those children coming in so I can be sane. You know, it's the new people walking into Alcoholics Anonymous that keep me going. You know, they talk about, you know, I was worried about how in the hell a bunch of people sitting around a table talking could stop me from drinking. You know, and there's psychiatrists and sociologists, and I was almost as crazy a human being as you would ever want to meet, you know, and I mean, and that is the truth. You know, those people could never do me any good. You know, the only thing I ever worried about when I talked to one of those people is, what the hell did they want to hear? You know, what are they looking for here? I didn't even have any idea what the truth was, period. But what I started to understand is that a drunk that had been where I was, that was armed with the facts about a solution, could share their experience, strength, and hope. And you know what? I didn't have a hole to jump through anymore. The only thing I had to do was listen. I didn't even have to talk. The amazing thing is that in all these countries and all these places we are and everywhere else we go, that's the one thing that works, one drunk talking to another. You know, and I could cover the traditions for hours, but that is the bottom line. That is the bottom line of all other, is that what, that's what the hell we do here. You know, they talk about the inverted triangle. You know, y'all, I'm sure y'all have heard that talk from your delegate and all these people, how the group is the number one thing. Y'all have any idea why that is? I'm sure I could get 1,000 answers. That's because if a shaking, crazy drunk walks through the door, guess what? GSO is not going to sober him up. Your district is not going to sober him up. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is not GSO. Alcoholics Anonymous is not your district. Alcoholics Anonymous is you people. You're the ones that are Alcoholics Anonymous. Y'all are the ones that are there on the front line waiting for a drunk to come in. That's where the unity comes from. It comes from you. You know, GSO can print all kind of wonderful little pamphlets, you know. And we would like to think that these pamphlets are going to straighten out Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I go into groups all over the place. They still got a circle and triangle sitting in the rack. Those things stopped being made in 1994. You know, oh, but we have literature. You know, I love doing this, if you can't tell. But, you know, the bottom line, I think we need to get back to telling our people. You know, in fact, I went to a committee I was on at conference. You know, I got a little upset, as you can tell I can do that. And I told them, you know, you need to print one more pamphlet. And they said, well, what's that? I said, why don't you get off your ass and talk to somebody? You know, just that's all we need, one more. You know, because I think a lot of times we've lost that. I really do. You know, 3 more minutes, boy, I can do some harm with this. You know, back in the old days, you know, I like reading the 12x12. It gets into working with others, and it talks about going out and finding these drunks and all of that. And, you know, we don't do that anymore. You know, we sit in a meeting, and we wait for them to come to us. That's it. We show up at meetings, and they're supposed to come on in. You know, and we, how many people take the effort to go out and find a new drunk? I mean, if they show up at the meeting, we might worry about them. If it's not Shoney's night, you know. You know, a lot of times I think we've lost what we're really here for, is that we are here for that one person that nobody even knows that walks through the door. You know, in my group, we fight over them people. You know, it's like a submarine, you know, coming in. But I think I'm going to shut up here in a little bit. But, you know, I want to thank the people who asked me to come here. I want to thank all my friends. There's a ton of them, and from out of state, you know, and a few states. I want to thank y'all for asking me. I want to thank y'all for staying awake, you know, after a long day. And, you know, I hope we all learn something here. You know, that I'm never failed to be amazed at how much more I have to learn. You know, whenever I think I have all the answers, I'm just about in the middle of getting into pure self again. And thank you all for inviting me, and thanks my friends for coming, and thank you.
Thank you, Irving. When I was asked to chair this panel, I was thinking about what it is that unifies us, and I think I've come up with two things. The first is that we are a fellowship of men and women who bear the mark of pain. Each of us, in a very intense and personal way, know what the word despair means. And the second is that each of us has experienced the power of compassion to heal that pain. I'd like to thank our panel. Why don't we have another round of applause for them. And we'll close with the Serenity Prayer. And I think we have few enough people here that we might actually be able to have a true circle of unity if we sort of go up this aisle and that aisle. Let's give it a try anyway.